You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. If you know what's good for you, toxic push-ups, healthy chemicals, and the dose response. A common question I'm asked by students is X good for you? In place of X, you can plug in a food, a supplement, or even an exercise. Just as common is for me to be asked the corollary. Is X bad for you? First of all, this is a question better asked of your doctor than your martial arts instructor. In any case, the very way these questions are phrased betrays ignorance of how complex health, nutrition, and the human body are. Many substances are either good for you or bad for you, depending on the amount you ingest. Others are never good for you, but in small enough amounts are not bad for you and are easily disposed of by your body. Still others do little harm in small amounts, but accumulate in your body over time and can eventually reach harmful levels. But this is actually quite rare. Your body's response to different amounts of a substance can be plotted on a graph for that substance, frequently forming a curve called the dose-response curve. Much depends on what other substances you have ingested or will ingest at the time, because substances interact in your body in a variety of ways. Studying dose response is an important part of medical education. When people give you the very sensible admonition, you should check with your doctor, dose response, interaction with other substances, and your medical history are all factors your physician must consider before giving you advice about ingesting a substance. Do you begin to see what a can of worms you open when you ask the ostensibly simple question, is this stuff good for you or bad for you? As is so often the case in complex, nuanced situations, the best answer is usually, it depends. This subject beautifully illustrates just how our human brains resist complexity and nuance. We like simple answers to complex questions. But in this area, simple answers are nearly always wrong, or at least incomplete. First, let's accurately define a few terms. Chemical. This is one of my favorites. It's common to hear someone say something like, I don't like a lot of chemicals in my food. Well, then you'd better stop eating. All matter, including everything you could possibly eat, is made up entirely of chemicals. Any plant or animal you eat is made up of compounds that consist mostly of carbon, hydrogen, and nitrogen. Those are chemicals. Of course, some of you are thinking, okay, smart guy, I mean man-made or synthetic chemicals. Oh, so you mean you prefer natural chemicals, like arsenic, mercury, plutonium, or lead? I dealt with the subject of things that are, quote, natural, unquote, in the episode entitled, It's a Natural Fact. So refer to that episode for more commentary on the logical fallacy called the appeal to nature. Suffice it to say that your body's defenses, like the liver, draw no distinction between substances that are, quote, natural, unquote, and substances that are not. The next term is poison. From a medicinal, scientific, and biochemical perspective, the word poison is almost entirely meaningless. Without looking at dose response, you don't know how much of a substance is dangerous to you. Guess which substance causes the most poisonings of humans each year? Alcohol. No, misusing the words chemical, poison, organic, synthetic, or natural will bring no light to this subject. The next term is toxin. This is a frequently misused and misunderstood term. A toxin is a toxic substance produced by a living organism. Poison plants, poisonous animals, and venomous animals, yes, there's a difference, produce toxins. When people refer to toxins in the environment, they are either referring to toxicants like lead or mercury, in other words, toxic substances not produced by living organisms, or more likely, they are referring to poorly defined and described substances that they imagine are in the environment, or that they imagine are accumulating in your body. If someone tries to sell you on a product or process that is supposed to rid your body of toxins, keep your hand on your wallet. Someone is trying to rob you. Which takes us to the next term to define, detoxification. This is another one of my favorites. With very few exceptions, like metal poisoning, your body does not make a habit of accumulating toxins or toxicants. Unless there is something very wrong with you medically, like metal poisoning, or liver or kidney failure, your body does not need detoxification. It takes care of that quite nicely as part of everyday business. Thank you very much. Your skin, kidneys, lymphatic system, gastrointestinal system, and especially your liver, handle the job of eliminating harmful substances from your body. When you hear that someone has gone into a substance abuse facility to undergo detoxification, this is actually quite a different situation and a different use of the word detoxification. In this case, detoxification is the term used for the process of allowing your body to rid itself of an addictive substance while safely managing the symptoms of withdrawal, which can be very dangerous. Anyway, back to your liver. The liver is the main organ for the process of removing harmful substances from your body. It is not, contrary to what some may believe, a place where toxins are filtered, because it is not a filter. It does not get clogged. The liver does not accumulate or store toxins or toxicants. What it is a chemical factory that converts potentially harmful substances into water-soluble chemicals that can easily and harmlessly be sweated or excreted from your body. Therefore, because the liver does not accumulate toxins either by storing them or by being clogged with them, there's no reason to ever cleanse or detoxify your liver. The human weakness for magical thinking leads us to be susceptible to a desire for purification rituals. Purification rituals exist in pretty much every pre-modern culture. These rituals usually entail something arduous and unpleasant, like fasting, swallowing noxious compounds, or sweating heavily. What you are being purified of varies from evil spirits, sinful thoughts, to nowadays, toxins, and more importantly, you are being purified of a large amount of cash. What practitioners of alternative medicine call detoxification falls into this category of purification rituals. It's effectively an attempt to use magic to cure a condition that does not exist in the first place. Add the placebo effect and boom, easy money for the witch doctor. Moving on from the liver, I'm going to say something to you now that I've never said to anyone before. Let's discuss your colon. Your colon also does not accumulate toxins. Alternative medicine practitioners use fake terms like mucoid plaques and toxic sludge, which are dreamed up from whole cloth to lend a patina of sciencyness to this nonsense. The use of colonic cleansing and injecting bizarre substances like coffee into your colon have never been shown to have any medical value in robust, high-quality medical studies. Again, our susceptibility to magical thinking leads us to desire purification rituals. Let's get back to dose response. A typical declaration by people who don't understand dose response would be, "There's no such thing as a safe amount of a toxic substance." This statement on its face is patently false. Bill Maher, the popular host of the HBO TV series Real Time, is notorious in the skeptical community for making exactly this unsupported claim. I usually find Mr. Maher's show enjoyable, but he shows his scientific illiteracy when he comments on medicine, vaccines, and nutrition, especially in front of millions of viewers, many of whom are badly educated and credulous. It's literally possible for a substance to both possess toxicity and to be a nutrient, depending on the amount ingested. Some examples include vitamin A, Vitamin A is absolutely necessary for you to live, and yet too much of it can make you very sick, or even kill you. Any Inuit hunter from the Arctic can tell you not to eat the liver of a polar bear. In the last several centuries, a good number of European explorers died in the Arctic from doing just that. They died from hypervitaminosis A, or a toxic overdose of vitamin A. Another example is water. Yes, it's actually possible to be poisoned by water. Water poisoning is called dilutional hyponatremia. This is not drowning. For most adults, 6 liters, or about a gallon and a half of water, will do the trick if you drink it within a short enough interval of time. By Bill Maher's criteria, you'd better stop drinking water. Another example would be iron. Iron is necessary for the formation of the hemoglobin in your blood, which transport the oxygen you breathe to your tissues. Yet once again, too much iron intake can make you sick or kill you. It's called iron poisoning. The dose-response effect can even apply to other things, like sunlight. A moderate amount helps your body make a necessary nutrient, vitamin D. Too much, though, can burn you. Even more can lead eventually to skin cancer. Another example is exercise. Obviously, we all need regular exercise, and for most of us, doing too much of it is not a problem. There is, however, a notable subset of people who are obsessive about exercise and who frequently do too much. The ill effects can include a depressed immune system, stress fractures, irregular heartbeat, and reproductive problems, especially for women. What's more important than whether some amount of a substance can harm you is what is the therapeutic index of the substance. Yep, here we come to another bit of new terminology. The therapeutic index is the ratio of a therapeutic dose to a toxic dose of a given substance. Or in the case of some substances, for some people, the ratio of a recreational dose to a toxic dose. Let me try to simplify this for you. The difference between the amount of water you need for survival and the amount of water that will poison you is very large. That is the therapeutic index of water. There are a number of substances, however, which if you only take double or triple the recommended dose, can cause problems. These substances would have a very different therapeutic index than would water. So a much more incisive question to ask about a substance is not, is it good for you, or is it bad for you, but rather, what is the therapeutic index of this substance? Let's finish by taking a deeper look at a controversial substance. NutraSweet, also called aspartame. There may not be a more misunderstood substance. It's also probably the most thoroughly tested substance in history and has been deemed safe by the regulatory agencies of more than 90 countries. Despite all of this, the internet is rife with screeds that harangue the uneducated about the dangers of aspartame. None of them are backed by solid science. Let's dig a little deeper. Many of these internet articles refer to studies in which aspartame was injected into laboratory animals with dire results. There's one problem with this line of reasoning. Aspartame has been reliably proven in a huge number of quality studies to never make it into your bloodstream when ingested, either in food or drink. Long before it can reach your blood, your amazing digestive system uses enzymes to break it down into methanol and 2 amino acids. Not one atom of aspartame makes it to your bloodstream. For the same reason, aspartame cannot get into an unborn fetus or into breast milk, no matter what you read on the internet. If, however, you're putting aspartame into a hypodermic needle and injecting it into your arm, you have a problem. So as I said, our digestive system breaks the aspartame down into methanol and 2 amino acids. Wait a minute. Did you say it produces methanol? Methanol? That's poisonous. In large enough amounts, yes. But your body does just fine breaking down and eliminating small amounts of methanol. Methanol is produced in this way by your body all the time from a number of different foods, As a matter of fact, when your body breaks down the constituent chemical components in tomato juice, methanol is produced in amounts 4 to 6 times greater than the amount produced when drinking the same amount of an aspartame-sweetened beverage. Why don't we start a campaign to educate people about the dangers of tomato juice? Your body sometimes even uses some of the methanol to meet some of its other chemical needs. Any remaining methanol is eliminated from the body when your amazing liver converts it into formaldehyde. Formaldehyde? I heard that was poisonous. In large enough amounts, yes it is. So if you, like Bill Maher, think that there is no such thing as a safe amount of a toxic substance, you may want to consider having your amazing liver removed. You see, your liver produces thousands of times the amount of formaldehyde each day than you could possibly get from just aspartame. As a matter of fact, formaldehyde is a key metabolite needed to make other essential compounds in your body, including the DNA in each cell. I bet most of you didn't have a clue that formaldehyde is used by your liver to manufacture DNA, the very stuff of life. Yet if you drink a glass of formaldehyde, you probably won't like the results. Whatever formaldehyde is left after your body is done using it is then converted to formic acid. Formic acid? Isn't that bad for you? Wait for it. In large enough quantities, yes. But in the small amounts that result from the metabolization of aspartame, it doesn't pose any problem at all for your body. It either harmlessly leaves your body as part of your urine, or is changed into carbon dioxide and water. I should point out that about 1 in 15,000 people in the U.S. suffer from a genetic defect known as phenylketonuria. People with this condition cannot safely process phenylalanine, which is one of the two amino acids produced when your liver breaks down aspartame. There are a number of sources of phenylalanine in an ordinary diet. Nearly all newborn babies are screened for phenylketonuria soon after birth. It's extremely unlikely that there are a significant number of undiagnosed sufferers out there. So in the astronomically unlikely case that you suffer from undiagnosed phenylketonuria, you should avoid aspartame. If you already know that you suffer from this malady, your doctor has educated you long ago about foods that are dangerous to you, including aspartame. Anyway, that's what I think, but I could be wrong. Let me know what you think at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.